true or false. More people believe in ghosts than they do in Brexit being a success. True or false?
That has got to be true, because I saw somewhere that only 11% in a recent poll believed that Brexit was a success. That's got to be true. More people believe in ghosts.
So what do you think? What do you think, if that's the number, what do you think the number of people who believe in ghosts are?
It's got to be like 25% or something. It's got to be.
Do you reckon?
People are mad.
We are in the Halloween phase, so this is going to be quite good to run as a reoccurring first question. So you think more people believe in ghosts than Brexit?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
And Liz?
You mean more people in the world believe in ghosts than believing
in Britain.
Brexit? Oh, in Britain.
In Britain.
In Britain. Okay, yeah, all right. Yeah, I think it probably is true. Yeah, I think you'd be surprised how many people believe in ghosts. So I only know that because everyone that comes here, because we've actually got an ancient burial site believing in ghosts. We've got plague victims here from the Black Plague. So yeah, everyone's like, have you got ghosts? Is it haunted? So probably is.
So
I mean, who
true,
believes you've... Brexit's a success? 11%. Wow. A lot of people say it hasn't been delivered properly, apparently. We haven't had a real Brexit. The Remainers ruined it. People like me.
Yeah, blame the postman. Just didn't deliver it correctly.
It is true.
Yay!
38% believe in ghosts, and yeah, 11% believe in Brexit. Do you want me to give you another one?
Yeah, go on. Give
you want to give me another one of these? I'll give you an extra round for the true and false. Do you think more people in Britain believe in lizard people versus Brexit being a success? Liz?
Oh no, this is so depressing.
I think it's probably true.
Oh, no.
And we've got a lot of anti-vaxxers as well. So yeah, I think it's probably true.
Graham?
Oh, God. I'm going to be so disappointed in my country now if it's more than 11% of people believe in lizard people. I mean, wow.
Hey, man, like, loads of stuff has been coming out of Congress, and it's fucking weird.
That's like over 7 million people with, like, no grasp on reality whatsoever. And that's just talking about Brexit.
I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yeah. Go on, more people believe in... fucking lizard people. I don't know.
So you think it's true, and Liz, you think it's false?
No, I think it's true. I think probably lizard people thinking is probably more common than successful Brexit thinking.
You're gonna be really happy with this. It is false. It's 4%.
Oh, thank God for that.
4%. I'm gonna do this every week through Halloween now, actually. First two questions.
That's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. So yeah, thank you, Britain, for not being as quite
thank
insane.
You for not being quite batshit crazy.
But then 11% still think Brexit is a great idea, and I'm like, come on, that is not so far away from believing in lizard people.
Well, in that 11%, Graham, there's a lot of people like hedge funders made a lot of money out of Brexit, so I'm sure they do think it was successful.
Yeah, very true. Very true, Liz.
That's more to do with wealth accumulating, more wealth from thanks to Brexit. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. Graham. Labour did 5 tweets this week talking about Russian interference. True or false? And of course, this links into Nathan Gill. So anything about Nathan Gill would be that as well.
I would say true then, because they should. I mean, if they didn't, they should have done, because, yeah, that's something that Labour can really hammer both the Tories and Reform on, that no one can argue against.
Liz?
I think it's probably false, because they prefer to go on about leaving the ECHR.
It is false. The answer is zero.
They didn't do any.
Didn't do a single tweet. Oh,
another lost opportunity. Another missed goal by Labour. Okay, doesn't surprise me.
The Rejoin EU... final question over to Liz. The Rejoin EU party did more tweets about Russian interference this week then all major parties combined, true or false? So that would be the Greens, the Lib Dems, Reform, Conservatives and Labour.
Not. And what about SNP?
No, I haven't included them.
OK, because SNP are normally quite good on that.
Yeah.
I think it's true. I think the Rejoin EU party definitely have been pushing that. And I'm glad to say, I will put this in here, Alistair Campbell retweeted my tweet about Nathan Gill.
I think
that's the sort of Labour thing that I feel should be happening. Just putting that in there.
I'm with Liz on this. So yeah.
You think the Rejoin EU party did more tweets on Russia than Paul?
Absolutely. Yeah, because it sounds like something you'll do.
I mean, common sense comms. It is true. Labour did no references. The Conservative Party and CCHQ did no references. The Green Party did not refer to it. And the Lib Dems did it once. And obviously, Reform weren't going to say anything because it's their leader of Wales that's been done for bribery and charged with conspiracy. So that was wild. I couldn't believe that when I was doing some research for this. One tweet from the Lib Dems, that's it. On that note, shall we get started? Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast and my lovely co-host this week. Graham, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Graham Hughes. I run the Politics Social Channel. I'm the first person to go to every country in the world without flying. And I once won a private island on a game show.
Love that. You were there. Love
I
that.
I was there you last were? Week.
How was it?
Hot. Sunny? Hot and oppressive. I was working. I was working hard.
Were people chasing you out of the country because you've come out of the UK and entered?
How dare you go to someone else's country? I've got problems with immigration and I've got problems with climate change. So two things that people feel very passionately about in this country, either to condemn people who dare come from somewhere else to somewhere else. You've got the refuckers saying that there's no such thing as climate change while my island is going underwater. So, you know, I don't know how you put those two things together.
God, there was also the COVID vaccine denial as well, wasn't there? Saying it caused cancer in the king. And then you had...
And paracetamol. Paracetamol causes autism.
Don't give Tylenol to the baby.
It's been a rough week for Tylenol. Hi, I'm Kirk Perry, CEO of Kenvue, the company behind Tylenol. And I just want to say, we hear you. You don't want you or your future children to have autism. That's why we're proud to announce Tylenol No Autism, or Tylenol Nautism. With Tylenol Nautism, we've decided to remove the ingredient...
Acetaminophen.
Completely out of our formula. Same fast release, now with zero autism technology. No longer will you need to fear your child having incredible memory and never forgetting your birthday. No longer will you need to worry about your child having expert knowledge of computers before they even reach middle school. No longer will you need to think about your kid having exceptional pattern recognition and pointing out that you only flip-flop when the man in charge tells you to do so. The pill inside this bottle isn't on the spectrum anymore. It's off spectrum. So if you're an ignorant little sheep that believes that this is anything more than the man in charge of the country lining the pockets of his buddies with even more wealth and continue to perpetuate unwarranted stigma around autism, then maybe Tylenol Nautism is for you. See you at the pharmacy.
Was it David Bull who introduced the COVID conspiracy guy onto the Reform stage and said that he'd written the policy? Then Farage and Tice went mad and said, no, you must apologize for saying that. It's rude. Even though that was there. Wow, that's just wild. Liz, can you please introduce yourself to us?
Well, it's all very boring after going on a game show and winning an island. But basically, I am Liz Webster and I founded Save British Farming after Brexit because I recognised that the Remain campaign had totally forgotten to talk about food in all the Brexit shenanigans. And food is the biggest sacrificial lamb of Brexit. And that means everyone's security and everyone's health.
It doesn't seem to be getting particularly better in that area, does it? I think... I was really more into the US trade deal and the UK.
Talking of lamb, Liz, apparently farmers are up in arms about the amount of lamb that's coming across from Australia and New Zealand now.
Yeah, I'll go into that quickly. It's been a funny journey for me in the last 10 years, going on about Brexit being in the farming community who tend to be, I mean, this is a generalisation, but they tend to be quite conservative in their opinions. They live a sedate, but not all of them are, but the majority of them are fairly conservative, particularly those in the NFU. And so everyone thought that all farmers voted Brexit. They didn't. In fact, probably given that most are male and most are older, in fact, we think that the vote for Brexit was below the national average. But everyone believes that all farmers went out and voted Brexit. And that's gone on for ages, which has desensitised people against being concerned about farms being thrown under the bus. Kind of like, I don't feel sorry for those farmers going bust. They voted for it. They deserve it. But of course, I've always sort of said to them, well, you might not like the person producing your food, but you rely on that food. And that's the message I've tried to get across. But anyway, on that journey, I've had lots of farmers saying, including Remain voting farmers, the result is the result, Liz. You have to accept it because it was under Tory rule, right? And now what has happened is that the farming community have woken up to what is going on with farming very, very late. And they are very comfortable blaming Labour for what's going on. And I'm saying, well, it's not just Labour. Labour are continuing the Conservative Brexit policy. And that is why food and farming is in trouble. This was always going to happen. This is what we said would happen. And they are struggling to come to terms with that fact because they prefer... It's easy to blame someone in a different tribe. If you belong to a tribe, it's very hard to then actually look at your own tribe and say, it's my tribe's fault. And so I've been between these fault lines on both sides of the fence here. And it's been really, really painful, particularly in the last year, because when the government announced the Inheritance Acts, I was kind of like, oh, this is a continuation of Brexit. It's a fire sale. They want to sell up all the farms and give them to big corporations. And for a while, it was really difficult because people who had been in my team were suddenly going, pay your taxes. Farmers can't afford to pay these taxes because they don't make enough money because the corporations skim everything off the top. Anyway, this has gone on and on and on. But something that people don't realise, which is something that is going to be coming out more and more and more, is that the inheritance tax relief was hammered in, railed in, protected by our membership of the European Union when we signed Maastricht in 1992. So the way of getting rid of the inheritance tax is rejoining the EU.
Well, it's like a VAT on private schools. That couldn't have happened unless we left the EU.
So
the Brexiteers who voted for it and, you know, are whinging about it now. Well, you get what you voted for. It's like immigration's gone through the roof.
Because of Brexit.
What we expected, you know, because of Brexit. There's boats coming across from France because of Brexit.
But the biggest problem, Graham, for us in terms of rejoining, if you believe in rejoining, is diverging from EU regs. So the VAT thing is a problem because of that, not the ideology, and also the same with the inheritance tax. I mean, I'm of the view that people who've got the most to afford to pay tax should pay tax. The biggest people that don't pay tax are corporations like Amazon.
I feel as if I've listened to sort of both sides of the view and I get both sides, but what it really comes down to for me is I don't want corporations running our food.
Exactly.
They all seem to have, every single corporation, well, not every single corporation, that's unfair, but a lot of the corporations that take control of stuff that I would deem, you know, part of society or national security have fucked it up massively. Yep. Look at water.
Yeah.
Food is as important as water, and they fucked it up. Gas and electric, they fucked it up.
Yeah.
I think there were stats this week being pumped around on social media saying that we're paying 20% more than Ireland, even though Ireland has the same electrical production and gas production as us, which I was like, what the fuck? Why is it? I assume because the pound's gone down, so we import, so that means it costs more, which means everything's driven up with inflation. But also I'm assuming we're being ripped off. Because we privatised it so much.
We privatised so many things and got a bad situation and just made it worse and made it more expensive. At least the trains are coming back under a national scheme now. What drives me mad is these so-called patriots, especially the ReFuck people, who say that we shouldn't be driving towards net zero. And this week, Kemi Badenoch also dropped the pledges towards net zero. And it's like they don't want energy self-sufficiency. They don't want energy security. They don't want energy sovereignty. They want everyone going anywhere in their car or in their tractor or just heating their homes to have their bills, the cost of just doing those things, to be beholden to some tin pot dictator on the other side of the world, maybe or maybe not invading their neighbor and driving the prices up, something we can do nothing about. And while we continue to be absolutely, you know, completely and utterly dependent on this source of energy, when we've got 40% of the potential wind energy of the whole continent of Europe around this island. It blows my mind that we don't utilize, you know, we aren't screaming that from the rooftops. Instead, we're still absolutely depending on this oil coming from some very, very dodgy regimes that, you know, it's dangerous. It's toxic. It's not particularly good for the environment, I hear. And we're running towards it with gay abandon.
I heard, and we've got to take it with a pinch of salt because of the source, but I heard Elon Musk claim he calculated for the UK, I think it's about 10 to 15 miles squared of solar panels with batteries in the right place would power the whole of the UK.
Yeah, easily.
So,
but not at night. Not at night. But yeah, batteries in the right place. So the I was going to say the lead singer of Octopus. Then what the hell is wrong with me this morning? the CEO of Octopus was talking about this on Question Time, pointing out that you could have a decentralized storage system. Once you have X many million electric cars with two-way charging, you can bank power in cars around the nation. And then when you need it, you can pull it out of the cars rather than having to build bespoke battery, you know, mega battery farms or whatever they call them. I think that's a damn good idea. And this thing that the Tories and Refuck are both saying we should continue with fracking, that Labour want to ban it completely. And that we should be opening up the Rosebank fields off the coast of Scotland. And I'm just thinking, it's not going to make our bills any cheaper. Our energy is based on the highest commodity price, which is gas. We get most of our gas now from Qatar, just thousands of miles away. And so it does. We pay for our oil on the international market. We don't get a bargain. We don't get like money off because it's our oil. It doesn't work that way.
We didn't do what Norway did when we banned oil. That's the problem, because Labour ended up ditching Harold Wilson. He suddenly was pushed away and Callaghan came in as the warm-up act for Thatcher. Yeah. And it's feeling eerily similar now, actually. Yeah. I'm feeling that Starmer's very much the warm-up act for Farage. Yeah.
But please don't. Okay. But yeah, you got a point. But no, the Labour are talking about a sovereign wealth fund in this country now, which is, you know, and nobody knows because their comms are bloody awful.
I thought they talked about it in the manifesto and then they retracted it and just decided to focus on energy investment, but not the sovereign wealth fund.
You need to watch what they're doing and not listen to what they're saying is my advice, because that's what I'm doing. Mainly because I am very, very focused on the food and trade deals. And their rhetoric doesn't add up with what they're doing. And you just saw it this week with them saying that Farage's policy was racist. And then they delivered his a light version of his policy, which they have now said is racist. I mean, you just couldn't make it up.
But he is a racist.
We're not talking about him. We're talking about Labour policy. We're talking about Labour saying one thing and doing another. So they called Farage's policy on indefinite leave to remain racist.
Yeah.
And then they said he's racist. And the row became about, is Nigel racist or not, and were they inciting violence on poor Nigel?
Yeah, because he's got better comms.
They actually delivered, or they're delivering, a policy which is Farage light on indefinite leave to remain. They're going to, instead of it being 5 years, they want to make it 10 years, and it is a Farage light policy.
Can you explain to me and the viewers what that 5-10 years means with indefinite
leave? Well, at the moment, if you're here continuously for 5 years, you get indefinite leave to remain. And the other thing that no one has been speaking about, because I used to run a recruitment agency for domestic staff and nannies, and so I worked a lot with immigrants who wanted to come and work and do work that British people don't want to do. And if they came here on a visa or they came over here as a spouse or whatever, if they were here for 5 years, they could then apply for indefinite leave to remain. And that has become much more common because over the last 15 years, the cost of getting a passport has gone through the roof.
Mm.
So if you're here on a fairly basic wage and you want to get British citizenship, it becomes unaffordable because it's several thousand pounds now, whereas it used to just be a few, you know, I can't remember what it was before, but, you know, a couple of hundred quid at the max. But they also have to do the citizen tests as well, which are another barrier. So ultimately, there's a lot of people here with indefinite leave to remain. I don't know the exact stats, but I would say it's a lot. So really what we've got is another Windrush reality coming. And they've said that Farage is racist, his policy is racist. It is, in my view. Yes, it is a racist policy. And this completely scapegoating migrants is disgraceful. But ultimately, Labour have gone in and done a Farage light policy move and saying, OK, and the new Home Secretary, Mahmood, is, in my view, it's just a continuation of what we had under the Tories. It is the same type of rhetoric. I mean, Starmer this week has actually called to change the ECHR. Now, we can't change the ECHR. It is just the same things happening that happened pre-Brexit and post-Brexit under the Conservatives.
And it's dangerous.
And, you know, if you've got people sort of going around going, oh, well, I'm here, I've got my passport, and you're not allowed to be here because you've got indefinite leave to remain. It's pitting people against one another. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really, really unpleasant. And the other thing to consider is that some passports don't allow you to have a second passport. So if you've got indefinite leave to remain, then that stamp means a lot because you can't actually get a British passport without revoking your other nationality. So all of these things are really, really nasty. And the only person really talking positively about immigration is Zoe Gardner, and pointing out the truth that we've got a top-heavy elderly population, the baby boom after the war. The pill was invented. We've all had less children. And as a result, because of this baby boom population living longer as well, it means that we actually really, really should be here saying, immigrants, come and look after us because we need them.
It was weird last week hearing Boris Johnson be pro-immigration. That was mind-blowing on the Harry Cole show.
I tried to avoid him. But he's always been pro-immigration, in fairness.
But he said, who do you want? He said to Harry Cole, who do you want to kick out? Do you want to kick out the Ukrainians? Do you want to kick out the Hong Kong Chinese? Do you want to kick out the nurses? Do you want to kick out the social care workers? Do you want to kick out the doctors? Yeah. And it was very, very interesting seeing that. And Harry Cole didn't have any answer to that. And then just tried to go back to the original point of, oh, there's too many people here. And I did a video this week, which is 20 minutes long, of Nigel Farage saying non-stop racist comments or having very well-cited examples of him making racist comments, like letters from schoolmasters and teachers and students on record saying, I was with him at school and he said stuff. But one of the interesting things, and this has just reminded me, is when he had that altercation on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here with Nella. Is it Nella Rose? Do you know the YouTube? I think she's a social media influencer. I don't know on what platform, but basically he was saying, oh, there's too many immigrants here. There's too, and they're taking, and you know, he said the population's increased by 10 million. And Nella went, well, that's a good thing, right? And he went, no, if you don't want a GP appointment. And she literally looked at him straight in the face and said, so I'm taking your GP appointment. And he got really patronizing. And he just went, no, stop, stop, stop. Listen, listen, listen. No, you're misunderstanding me. She had this great little quip where she just went, no, I'm disagreeing with you. It's down to lack of investment in the NHS. Yeah. That's the reason. And then she said, I bet you if all these immigrants left like you want, no, that's not what I'm saying. If all of them left, you'd be fucked. And he was a bit gobsmacked. And she said, you know, you need these doctors from abroad. And he went, and it was very silently said, because she was he talked over the top of her. He just went, yeah, that's wrong. That's wrong. And you're like, holy shit. And it's just sort of been skipped over in the press quite a bit. But it's just interesting you're saying this stuff. Because that's what's going to happen. You need immigrants. And it's weird seeing Boris Johnson. It's obviously seeing overlaps with Nigel Farage and seeing familiarity within Keir Starmer. Starmer had an Enoch Powell speech where he said, "Strangers in your own country."
Yeah, which is
it's frightening because it's we know where this leads. It's tribalism. Tribalism leads to violence and death, and that is you're better off to not be tribal with anything. I mean, you probably know my son was in the wrong place at the wrong time and ended up nearly being murdered by racism, which was allowed to run unchecked in a school. And it creates tension. And so you're better off to not be tribal with anything. So I am not at all tribal. I've always felt that, you know, you sort of look at something, you work it out, and then you think, which one do I go? But I came from a family where my dad was Conservative and my mum was Labour. So I think it sort of made me in a position where I had to look at it and go, well, which one do I agree with and not agree with? And when I was a teenager, it was quite fun being anti-Tory to wind my dad up.
I had a similar experience growing up in my household.
but I also saw Margaret Thatcher destroy my dad's business, you know, and I kind of realised that kind of looking at things, it's critical thinking, and that's what we all have to try and apply. But I think because we all hoped for change last year with the election, I had a wake up call early last year that actually we didn't vote for change. We just changed the puppets. And now people are beginning to wake up more. But I think it is really, really hard to criticise your own team when you feel as if it's in your comfort zone. And I never feel like that. I sort of feel like this is me, I'm myself, and I will work it out and think which is the best decision to make. Who do I agree with? And ultimately, my values are centred around equality, progressive thoughts, and making a better life for people without being caught by idealism. And that's why, for me, the European project, I think it's not perfect, but I think it is the best in the world. And it has delivered the best in the world because we've had peace in Europe for 70 years, which is now threatened. And in my view, it is threatened because of Brexit, because it's enabled Putin, which is why he backed it.
We kind of have a segue here, but Graham, I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. And Zoe is making the only positive case that I'm seeing. The SNP do it a bit. The Greens aren't doing it half as much as they should. I can't remember who it was. I think it was maybe Sean Berry or someone from the Greens last year making a really good and passionate speech why immigration is a good thing. But this is what Labour should be doing. They should be, instead of parroting the Farage rhetoric, the gutter press of demonising anyone who's not born on this rock, they should be making the positive case and explaining how much better Britain is as a result of immigration. And that Farage creep, he said, oh, because of all this immigration, we're having all this crime. Crime is down. Crime is down across the board. Compare any kind of crime from murder to people robbing your bicycle. It is down from 25 years ago across the board. Like, it's, in some cases, it's halved. In some cases, it's even more than that. You're less likely to get burgled. You're less likely to be assaulted. You're less likely to have something bad happen to you. But obviously, the cases where these bad things happen are blown up in the press. And we have this, at the same time, while we're safer, we feel less safe because we're made to feel less safe by the rhetoric of the media. But in that same time period, the number of people living in this country who were born in this country has doubled. So crime has halved in the time that the population of people coming from other countries has doubled. So does that mean there's a crime wave based on immigration? No, it's not true at all. Britain needs immigrants. We should be making the positive case. Labour should be making a positive case. And time again, Labour are like so frustrating because they are missing the trick every time. They've got a choice A and B, and they're going for the wrong choice every time. It's a bloody nightmare.
Comes back to comms as well. It was interesting listening to Owen Jones being at the Labour conference and talking about and interviewing people, and a lot of them going, "These are all the things that I'm doing." I think Dawn Butler said she's doing an anti-gambling campaign. Yep. Fucking brilliant! Like, I think that should be enforced. It's crazy how many gambling shops there are around the UK, and predominantly,
and they don't pay their fair share of tax.
Probably not. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know what
they're offshore. They're based in the Isle of Man or Gibraltar.
Shock.
But Andy Burnham has made the positive case. on immigration and wanting to rejoin the EU. But and he's got a lot of support. He's the most popular person to replace Starmer. But apparently, because Mahmoud is chair of the NEC, they're going to block him getting a candidacy to get back into Parliament. And that just sums everything up, really, of where we are. We're kind of trapped by a unit of ideology which is not democratic.
There was two things that happened this week to also, which was quite interesting because you both touched on it slightly. I think Michael Gove said, the Labour Party are carrying on Tory policies. And you go, oh, it's Michael Gove.
He's what was he doing at the Labour conference? I saw him there. I shouted to him, Michael, are you lost? He's looking for his Coke dealer.
But then there was...
He works with he's the editor of The Spectator.
I know.
He's now owned by Paul Marshall, who used to be in the Lib Dems.
He's the dad of the banjo player from Mumford and Sons, isn't he?
Yes, yeah.
What a claim to fame.
But there was also on Newsnight, there was a Greek economist, very famous, bald-headed, can't think of his name.
Aristotle. Socrates.
I wish. Plato. That would be nice. We'd actually get critical thinking back onto the... back onto the education system if that happened. No, but he said the exact same thing. He was like...
The problem with this government is not so much that they are reluctant to break pre-election promises. They have done it. They have slashed disability payments. So this is a government that smacks, a Labour government, that seems to have no problem treating with contempt the people who voted for it and to be courting at the very same time the people who never voted for them and never will.
Well, I mean...
Yes. Yeah, they're not vote winners. Not vote winners. They are vote losers. There's quite a few of these things that they've done which are just absolute vote losers, and no one's gone... Oh, wow, you went after PIP, which failed, thankfully. But they said, we're going after disability benefit. And like everyone's like, "What? Who is going to go into the voting booth in 5 years' time and be like, do you know what? I loved it, what they did to the disabled people. I'll vote for them."
There was a time when Labour split under Macdonald, I think, wasn't it? And they then ended up doing a coalition with the Tories. That was just before the war.
It must be World War II, 1930s. But that'd be Chamberlain.
I think a lot of them joined the Tories.
Could have set up a coalition. I'll have to check that.
We had a government of national unity during the war.
Yeah, and won. And it was interesting they didn't do that during COVID. I thought that was a bit silly.
Or during Brexit. It was suggested. It might have happened. Yeah, it hadn't been for the ego of two men.
Wonder who that could be. Talking of bad news... and poor Labour comms, why on earth are Labour not talking about Nathan Gill? Basically, from what I can tell, being a traitor.
The former Welsh leader of Reform UK has pleaded guilty to accepting bribes to make pro-Russian statements.
And taking Russian money, selling information to the public that, you know, Russia's right.
Yep.
Even though they killed two British people, dumped chemical weapons, which has never happened before.
Yeah, terrorist attacks on our soil, state-sponsored terrorist attacks, which resulted in the death of Dawn Sturgis, British woman. Also, the fact that they blew a passenger airline out the sky, MH17, the Malaysian Airlines craft.
Thank you very much. An association agreement is a halfway house between a trade agreement and EU membership. This is Ukraine's second attempt at an association agreement. The first attempt led to the overthrow of the democratically elected pro-Russian president and the current civil war which we have now in the Ukraine.
Now, just to continue with that, today we are rushing through an association agreement at undue speed with the Ukraine, and as we speak, there are NATO soldiers engaged in military exercises in the Ukraine. Have we taken leave of our senses? Do we actually want to have a war with Putin? Because if we do, we're certainly going about it the right way.
With Putin up in his rhetoric, where is this going to end? The Ukraine is a buffer zone between NATO and Russia. The EU is taking away this buffer zone, potentially putting NATO tanks on the border with Russia.
Amongst the long list of foreign policy failures and contradictions in the last few years, including, of course, the bombing of Libya, the desire to arm the rebels in Syria, has been the unnecessary provocation of Vladimir Putin. This EU empire, ever seeking to expand, stated its territorial claim on the Ukraine some years ago. Just to make that worse, of course, some NATO members said they too would like the Ukraine to join NATO. We directly encouraged the uprising in the Ukraine that led to the toppling of the President Yanukovych, and that led, of course, in turn to Vladimir Putin reacting.
What you are doing today is throwing petrol onto the bonfire that the EU lit. Putin is not the biggest threat to our civilization. The biggest threat is Muslim extremists.
Perhaps we ought to recognise that the West now faces the biggest threat and crisis to our way of life that we have seen for over 70 years. The recent beheadings of the British and American hostages graphically illustrates the problem. And of course we have our own citizens from our own countries engaged in that struggle too. In the war against Islamic extremism, Vladimir Putin, whatever we may think of him as a human being, is actually on our side.
This is for political reasons, and poking the Russian bear is very dangerous.
And the moral of the story is, if you poke the Russian bear with a stick, don't be surprised when he reacts.
For this reason, UKIP voted against this agreement.
I suggest we grow up. I suggest we recognise the real threat facing all of our countries, communities and societies. We stop playing war games in the Ukraine, and we start to prepare a plan to help countries like Syria, like Iraq, like Kenya, like indeed Nigeria, to try and help them to deal with the real threat that faces us.
Yeah, terrorist attacks on our soil. State-sponsored terrorist attacks, which resulted in the death of Dawn Sturgis, British woman. Also the fact that they blew a passenger airline out the sky, MH17, the Malaysian Airlines craft, which killed 300 people. Civilians, just innocent people flying, with a Russian rocket. And hardly anyone mentions it. Hardly anyone mentions their interference in Brexit, their interference in the Scottish referendum, their interference in the British elections, their interference in the American elections. And this guy, this Gilcrease...
Apart from which party? Which party does, Graham?
The Rejoin Party.
Reform. the Rejoin Party. Yeah, that. I get them mixed up. This week, Gil admitted in court he pled guilty to all 8 counts of bribery.
But one, which was conspiracy. So there are 9 counts. So he agreed to all the bribery charges bar one.
Yeah, he denied the conspiracy one. Yeah.
He had a conspiracy.
The conspiracy bribery.
If the Labour government wanted to get rid of Farage, you know, they say it's all about a fight of Farage. All they have to do is get that Russia report out. Blow off the dust and publish it. And that would absolutely really be problematic.
But the Russia report's been released. I know it's redacted, but in the Russia report, it says that the government at the time did not get the British security services to intelligence services to even look at the Russian interference during the Brexit referendum. And that's in the report that came out a few years ago. We know that already. What we need now is a
part two.
We need to have a look at what they did during the Brexit referendum, and also we need a Brexit impact report.
They won't do. They refused. They got 100,000 signatures, and they said, nope, not doing that. Moved on.
Do you remember the big argy-bargy about... And they put that useless fella who had the ferries, what was his name, Failing Grayling, in charge, and he managed to lose... he lost a rigged election to be head of the intelligence unit in Parliament, and they ended up releasing the report. But it was redacted, but I mean... I think that we need a new report. I think we need to have a good look at this, but Labour are hesitant to do so.
Did you ever...
There is a case in the ECHR, isn't there, that was brought by Caroline Lucas, Ben Bradshaw and Alan Smith from the SNP. And they had a review of that case on the papers, and it didn't... get permission, or you know, they didn't find for them because one of the questions failed. So you had all 3 had to be answered, and they've now got an appeal. So we should hear about that appeal. If it is, if they get the appeal granted, there will be a hearing in the Grand Chamber about the Russian interference in the Brexit referendum. And that's, I wonder if that's why they're so keen to leave the ECHR, or one of the reasons why. I think the other reason is for the land clearance. But
then why are Labour not talking about this?
Because the comms are shite.
Because I don't believe that the, in my view, I don't believe the Labour leadership, of which is controlled by McSweeney and Blue Labour, they are not Labour. They are Conservative. They're very, very right wing. Which I know, I know that hurts your brain.
No, it doesn't hurt my brain at all.
Putting out Maurice Glassman. I mean, I've spent hours listening to Maurice Glassman's.
I'm sorry.
Do you know who Maurice Glassman is?
Do you want an aspirin? Yeah, yeah, he's the head of Blue Labour, isn't he?
Yeah, he apologised to Farage this week for being called racist, even though I've got a 20-minute video of Farage being racist.
If you want to be a Tory, join the freaking Tories. Like, I don't get this. But when you're saying that they are Tories, Liz, you're right in their ideology, but they're not in the way they practice it. Because if they were, like, proper Tories, they'll use every lever in their arsenal to be able to stay in power. And they're doing the exact opposite of that. If their remit was to absolutely sabotage Labour and ensure they're a one-term party, or one-term government in this case, they couldn't do a better job.
But you're thinking about the party and the brand. If you believed in the ideology of what is being served and what Brexit has done, which is to turn everything upside down, then actually, and Starmer is new into politics as well, and the thoughts around Maurice Glassman. Maurice Glassman sits on ARC, which was founded by Paul Marshall, who was, as I said, he was in the Lib Dems, and in coalition he fused together with Michael Gove. He was behind the terrible education policy, which teachers, there's plenty in my family who
GB goes, News, you know, GB News,
GB News, exactly. And Maurice Glassman sits on the board of ARC alongside a whole load of very, very right-wing people. Now, every time there's something major that happens in Labour, Maurice Glassman is on Channel 4 News, is on LBC. You know, the government have control of the people that go out and talk on these issues. And Maurice Glassman is a placeholder, and he's out there. I have spent hours watching Maurice Glassman talking on GB News in 2022, talking pints with Nigel. They are completely in agreement with everything, apart from Glassman says that Nigel is a Thatcher, I don't know, bar saloon. He has some saying about that Nigel's a capitalist and he isn't. But actually, I think they are completely and utterly aligned. So perhaps some time ago, people decided to go in and create a movement within the Labour Party which could continue the project. And Blair kind of did a similar thing as well. Thatcher said, thank you very much. I mean, he did some stuff which pleased progressives, but he did some really bad stuff which upset progressives. So ultimately, I think that probably is what's happening. And McSweeney, in the state dinner, sat next to Rupert Murdoch.
Yep,
yeah. Morgan McSweeney, you should explain, is the chief of staff to, or chief advisor, we should say, to Keir Starmer. And I was at the Labour Party conference this week. I had a lot of conversations with a lot of people from, you know, just bog standard members like myself up right into the heart of government. And I don't want to speak out of turn, but I didn't find anyone with a nice thing to say about him.
Starmer or Glassman or both?
Morgan McSweeney.
McSweeney, sorry. What about Glassman and Starmer?
I didn't ask anyone about that. with Starmer, I think it Liz talked about a placeholder. To me, Starmer is like the ultimate placeholder for a politician, an MP, a PM. He is a placeholder. He's just like someone who'll just read off the auto cue,
like he claimed with the Enoch Powell speech that he did.
Roger someone Irrelevant. Else
wrote it. I just read it out.
Oh. I'm just going to read out what's on the auto cue. My really boring voice.
I'm bring up two things then. So Conservatives didn't bring it up either about Russian interference. Yeah. So we go, okay, I think we all know why. Reform aren't going to bring it up. We know why. If you look at Farage's speeches in the EU about Russia and compare them to Nathan Gill, might as well be identical. And we know Farage has taken Russian state money because he was on RT. It was all above board. But we know he's taken Russian state TV and then repeated what Nathan Gill said. Labour haven't brought it up. I remember watching a CNN report that got very much hidden. It was much better journalism on Russian interference in the UK than the UK journalism. And they got, I think it's Bill Bauer on, and he said...
They say that successive governments have turned a blind eye to Moscow's targeting of political parties and research roles inside the House of Commons. And they claim that well-connected lobbyists, lawyers and lawmakers have worked to help Russia infiltrate the British establishment. One of the witnesses was the American-born financier Bill Browder, who, despite at one point being Russia's biggest foreign investor, fell foul of the Kremlin 15 years ago. I spoke with him before the report was complete.
The people who we've seen working to further Russian interests in the UK are some of the people at the highest level of the establishment.
Can you give me names?
I can give you lots of names, but we start out with Lord Goldsmith.
Peter Goldsmith was the UK's Attorney General under Tony Blair. Browder claims that he was involved in a failed effort to help a Russian avoid being on an EU sanctions list. Also mentioned in his testimony is a company co-founded by Linton Crosby, a heavyweight in Conservative Party circles. That business is alleged to have helped Goldsmith's work.
Are you 100% confident of the evidence that you have to support these claims?
I would not have submitted the claims if I didn't have confidence in the evidence backing it up.
Goldsmith's law firm said it would not comment on client matters, but stressed that everyone has the right to legal representation. Crosby's company said that it was enlisted by Goldsmith and did not interact with Russian parties. And Crosby's lawyer said that he was not personally aware of the research done by the entity he co-founded.
Shock. Were people that had deep Russian connections. And he was saying it's in the Labour Party and it's in the Conservative Party and it's in the Reform Party. And there's Phil from a
and
different
it's in bias. The Lib Dem Party.
I don't know if it is in the Lib Dem Party. You think it is? Oh, from personal
experience. The Lib Dems
experience.
Have got Polly McKenzie, who sits with Danny Finkelstein on a regular podcast. You should listen to it. I did. I'll send you a clip that is really, 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 really pertinent. And so the majority of the Lib Dem party, it is meant to be a democratic party, are not. They're progressive and liberal. But the way that it's become engineered means that there is potential for the same thing that's going on in Labour, for a small group to make decisions. And so actually there's no point being a member of a party because they don't respect you. You're just fodder. They're just using your money. That's my view, but yeah. So I think it is. Look, what's happened in my lifetime is that I'm older than you two, is that more money has flowed into fewer hands than ever before. And the gap between rich and poor is so vast now. And so if you are vastly wealthy, Paul Marshall made a fortune from the financial crisis as a hedge funder, and he made another fortune from Brexit. So if you are that wealthy and you ideologically believe that you're a messiah and your mission wants, do you think it should be delivered, you can afford to buy all of the parties. Our democracy is up for sale. It has been forever. We've known that. And particularly with first past the post. And so, you know, what I'm seeing is really a repeat of what happened in Germany under the Weimar Republic. And we all promised we wouldn't repeat it. But I think that we assume everybody agrees with us. But there are people that actually welcome chaos and war. And that's what we as progressives have to try and grapple with, because it does make you feel uncomfortable. It is horrible. But it's nothing's really getting better. And we voted for change and we haven't got change. In fact, the only change we've got is that the Brexitism, is how I'll describe it, has been accelerated by Labour.
I've had an interesting stance with that, and it's funny that you say that, which I think in the 1930s, if Viktor Orban had been around and Maloney had been around, they would have gone full dictatorship, authoritarianism. And I think the only thing that's put a check on that is being in the EU. And then there's the extra kicker here. The UK have left, and now you've got a very authoritarian system in place already within the parliamentary system. The Prime Minister has more power than the President, and we're about to elect someone who, you know, is another version of Donald Trump, and nothing seems to stick to him. And it's interesting because I was thinking this week as well about nothing would stick to Hitler. Nothing. You could throw anything. He got sent to jail for an attempted coup. He was in jail, and then he gets to be Chancellor.
Trump didn't even go to jail. Wasn't even put on trial. Yep. For doing that. And it's one of these things that, like, I always feel like the left is like, you know, we look at the right and we go, well, you have a bunch of dickheads, because they put people like Trump and Elon Musk and, you know, the front and center, and they are dickheads, but the people behind them are not. There's some geniuses on the right. They've been planning this for 50 years. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly how to manipulate people. They control the means of communication. When I was talking earlier about, like, Labour voters not going in and, you know, going, oh, well, they were horrible to disabled people 5 years ago, so I'll vote for them. They're not trying to appeal to you. They're not trying to appeal to me at the moment, even as a Labour member. They're not trying to appeal to me. They're trying to appeal to what Liz was saying, the funders, the money. Because they know that whichever party gets the most money from the most funders, there's these big, big funders, they're going to win the next election. And they're
They're competing for Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan's support by trying to reform.
But they're not performing for me and you. They're performing for Rupert Murdoch. They're performing for Lord Rothermere and the Barclay brother and all those scumbags, because Paul Marshall. And this is a really, really dire situation we found ourselves in. And Labour, I'm so frustrated with them, not just because of the stupid policy decisions that they've made since they got in, but also because of the terrible, terrible comms. Every time they do something that's actually pretty good, nobody knows. And they don't seem to understand that 90% of the people are just going about their daily business. They don't give a shit about politics, right? We do. We run politics channels. You know, we care about this kind of stuff and we talk about it. But the vast majority of people are just getting on with their lives, and they only take in a tiny amount of what's happening in the political world. And unfortunately, while Farage, big frog mouth thing, is in charge of reform, it's very difficult to get our voices amplified. Labour could be doing it. Labour could be doing a press conference every morning like Claudia Sheinbaum does in Mexico, and being very, very popular by setting the agenda themselves.
From the moment they took power, it was like, if you imagine you're going to do a running race and you look and you've got behind you, you're really fit and healthy and your partners behind you have got some form of disability and you're going to win that race. But your main rival, you know, is you know, not quite as fit as the others. And what they decided to do was say, actually, we'll forget the main rival and we'll say the one behind him, which is Farage, has only got a handful of MPs, is the person I'm competing with. Mm-hmm. And so all they did from a comms point of view was echo Farage's... I mean, do you remember Jo Swinson was absolutely, you know... She was dismissed as being completely awful. How dare she say she might get into number 10? And that was the sort of pushback from the Tories in particular, who had the megaphone. When you're in government, everything is about comms. And you have the megaphone. People listen to you because the government's ringing up the media and saying, I want to say this. And they got hold of that megaphone and they said, OK, the Conservatives are dead. We're going to run a race with Farage. And all that did was make everybody believe that Farage could get into number 10. And we do this with the cows, you know, when we're trying to get the cattle in. I know this sounds weird, but you have, it's the psychology of it. When you're trying to get the cattle through the gate, we have to run all sorts of little games because they don't want to go through the gate that you need them to go through because they're a bit scared. They sat all summer outside and they're like, well, why do I want to go out there? So you have to tempt them back out. We play games to make sure that they go through the gate that we want them to go through, so there's not chaos. And so what Starmer's team have done under McSwindle, as Byline's Adam Bienkoff named him, has done, is they have confirmed that everybody should go through the wrong gate and that is the game. Mm. And it's not helped by the fact that Kemi Badenoch is so dreadful. And also...
She's so bad.
It's they need a new leader in the Conservative Party, and that would stop this. But even, you know, even the election guru guy, I can't remember his name now, is always going, Labour's losing twice more votes to the Progressive Party's Curtis than they are to reform.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the polls are telling us only 11% believe in Brexit, only 29% think that they still think Brexit is a good idea. And you've got three parties competing for 29%. And the rest of us, they're saying...
You're absolutely right. Liz, talking about Labour losing votes. They're losing them to progressive parties. The number of votes they're losing to Reform is negligible compared with the votes that they're losing to other parties. And to don't know. People who voted for Labour last year are now very much in the don't know column because they feel a bit politically homeless. They want to give Labour a chance to actually, you know, enact some of these really good bits of legislation that they promised when we elected them. The number of open goals that this Labour administration have missed over the last year has just been mind-blowing. And we've been sitting there on the sidelines going, just kick it in, just kick it in. The goalie has literally lapsed into a coma. All you need to do is, like, blow on the ball and it will go across the line. And they're like, nope. I'm going over here instead.
But if you're invested more in the Brexit project itself, which is Singapore on Thames and, you know, very liberal, horrible neo-feudalism, then, of course, that makes sense. And that's what I think is going on. I will send you a 2016 article from The Times, which talks about greedy farmers. They deserve Brexit. And it says we might not get what we want under the Conservatives. We might have to wait for a Labour government. And that, to me, signals that the controlling of that ideology comes from there. But it does blow people's minds because my farmers are tribally loyal to the sort of right wing, or most of them, not all of them. And then, you know, I'm with you guys on this side. And then so I'm in this weird position where I can sort of see it all going, oh, like, how do I get people to understand this? But for me, the answer is Andy Burnham, as long as he doesn't get into power and then do exactly what Starmer did again and sort of say what he needs to say to get elected and then suddenly start
does
doing
whatever he wants.
But, you know, it's got to be worth a go because I would rather have someone like Andy Burnham as Prime Minister than Nigel Farage. That is the simple answer. And I've got no trust or any faith in Starmer whatsoever. You know, Starmer is not going to win against Farage because he's terrible.
John Curtis said something interesting about the message that came out of Starmer's government when they went in, which is related to what you were just saying, Liz. And John Curtis said their whole platform was change. And then he said there were two words missing. To what? Change to what? What are they changing to? And as we've pretty much all agreed, it doesn't seem much, but that's also down to their comms not going, like, I didn't know there was an anti-gambling thing that they were pushing through. I think that's brilliant. It's needed in this country. Gambling's out of control.
Absolutely.
But I've not heard that messaging until someone's gone to the conference and filmed it. So you're going, right. But then Dawn Butler, I think, was also saying, the comms are shit.
And do you know what? As well, Al, like, at the conference, no internet. No one had any fucking internet. It drove me mad. Yeah. There's free Wi-Fi in the arena, but that's rubbish. It's like dial-up speed. And then you can buy premium Wi-Fi, but it doesn't work on laptops. It only works on phones. And then there's using your own SIM card. Now, last couple of years I've had a Giffgaff SIM card. This year I went out and I bought a Vodafone SIM card thinking I would get priority in any kind of crowd situation. Nothing. It was absolutely horrific. I've tried to do a live stream from the conference of Starmer's speech and it just kept dropping out. I was almost in tears at one point. I had a hotspot on my phone and I was dancing around my phone held up in the air like some shit Statue of Liberty on the roof trying to get a fucking signal. And I'm like, there are hundreds of people here who have blogs, who have YouTube channels, who have Facebook pages, who have Instagram reels, and they could be putting out content from the actual, you know, Labour conference. And Labour's like, no, we're going to lock this down. No information shall leave this area. I'm like, And by the way, if you wanted to get the actual internet that actually worked, it cost £120 for the duration of the conference.
They had a steal of a deal with the internet provider.
Yeah. So the ticket was £110. So it would have cost £10 more just to have decent internet to be able to do proper streaming and be able to report properly. Someone who's not with the BBC and doesn't have a satellite dish on the roof, and like that to me just it showed everything that Labour think wrongly about communications. They are stuck in the 1970s, and I blame Morgan McSweeney. Even though he's quite young, so I don't really understand why he hasn't sort of got with the programme and why he's still, I don't know.
I think he's, you know, the film being there, what's happened, and we know this because we were involved in Stop the Tories tactical voting. He has been assigned as being some election guru, winning, amazing god, but he didn't win it. We won it because we organised, together with Josh, absolutely leading it, we organised people to go out and vote for the second party in their constituency. And that is what worked. And
it's not being recognised,
is being credited with the hard work that we actually did as a community. And that is the truth of the matter.
And also... so, terrible 14 years of terrible governance from the Tories. People were sick of them.
Conservatives lost it, as well as Farage split the vote. Don't forget, in 2019 he actually pulled out from half of the seats. It's true that if he'd stood in all of the seats in 2019, Boris Johnson wouldn't have got a majority.
But also, Liz, I mean, you're right. I mean, he thinks that he won it for them, right? It's like the Sun in 1992, isn't it? The Sun what won it. But the reality is, like, okay, let's pretend that he's right. Let's pretend that it was just his absolute strategy. You know, it's amazing. He's a guru. He's an election guru, right? And he got 400 seats for Labour. Great, okay. Does that mean that he's good at policy? Because the two things are completely different. And it seems that actually policy, no. Demonstrably, they've had the U-turn on the winter fuel allowance. They've had the U-turn on going after PIP. They've had the way that they've communicated the strategy going forward has been absolutely appalling.
But I think the fallout with Sue Gray was that showed that they weren't interested in governing. And the first thing Starmer said was, you know, I'm prepared to be unpopular. I thought, well, okay, you've won a great majority. Now you're not very popular. So what you need to do is come out and just love bomb everybody so you get support. And he came out and then turned into Scrooge.
Another missed opportunity,
and then
Liz.
He also said, oh, I'm really happy I've won this majority, but actually I'm not happy with 5 years. I want 10. And I was like, what? You don't come out and say that to people. Like, you've just elected me
for
5 years, but actually I don't want 5, I want 10. So there's been disaster after disaster. But actually, I sat on Nigel Farage in his studio. He hasn't asked me back, actually, since I said that he was not to be trusted because he wanted the American trade deal. But I sat there and I actually said to him, Nige, you must be delighted with what's going on here. And he looked at me and he took a moment and then he laughed and put his face in his hands laughing. And it was a really eerie moment. And look, as I've said, Paul Marshall, Rupert Murdoch, they're controlled. That's what's been delivered on us, as in this is what you're getting, kids, whether you like it or not. And that's been the case ever since 2016. It was not a proper vote. No decision was made. 37% of those that voted Brexit. There was never a majority for Brexit, but it was enough for them to actually control us and get us into believing that that's what we have to have. And that's it.
I'm sorry to say we're at the end.
Wow, are we?
That went quick.
Yeah, I did.
So that's much what to talk when you about. Have fun.
Yeah, I've got more to say.
Right, on that note.
I don't want 5 years, I want 10.
Don't want an hour, I want 2. Right, bye guys.
Bye.
Hail to the lamp.
Bye. Hail the lamp, hail the lamp.
Tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Your Black Mirror Twilight Zone episode for today, Graham.
Okay.
Love, marry, send to Mars. Okay. You got to pick one of these. You got to pick out of these three what you do with them. Nigel Farage.
Oh, Jesus, why?
Rishi Sunak and the new female Archbishop of Canterbury.
Okay, so, that's easier than I thought it was going to be. I would send Nigel Farage to Mars immediately. I would I would love Rishi Sunak, just have a bit of a sesh, you know. And I'd marry the new female Archbishop of Canterbury. We now have a female Archbishop of Canterbury. It's just so cool. I think I'll marry her. I mean, she'll have to agree to marry me, but, you know. Although I think it'd be better if it was a lesbian marriage, I've got to say, because that would just upset the traditionalists even more.
Isn't that lovely, though? I was like, oh, that's the sort of feeling I had when Tony Blair was doing stuff like slowly getting rid of the Lords and putting progressive policies in and stopping the starving of children and putting healthy... I was like, oh, wow, something a little bit progressive there. Which is quite nice, because at the end of the day, he's the one that makes the final decision. But wow, that was like, okay, we've got progression starting to happen in the church. Liz, you're three. Mark Spencer from DEFRA. Boris Johnson, Glassman. Love, marry, send to Mars.
Oh my God.
Graham's face, even he's like, oh my God, you're horrible.
I think you should have given Liz my list. That's unfair.
Glassman's definitely
my list was
going,
easy.
Yeah, Glassman's definitely going to Mars.
Oh, so Johnson and Mark Spencer.
Oh no. Oh, yeah, this is just evil. Alex, this is
it
like...
is Halloween. It's Halloween month, so
I can love Boris for his pro-immigration stance and for making such a mess of his premiership that he got ejected early. In terms of marrying, I'm joining a convent. I'm becoming a nun. Sorry.